Hello and welcome to Dialect. I'm Tony Gosling, Dialect's Bristol's first podcast, set up in 2002 with a Millennium Grant from the Scarman Trust. We're sometimes on Bristol Community FM 93.2. Unfortunately, at the moment, we cannot get a guarantee from the manager that we will be transmitted on FM. And that was mostly on Tuesdays at noon. You can find them at bcfmradio.com. This week, the St Paul's Uprisings of 1980 in April. That's 38 years ago. We hear speeches from Ras Kumba Jahili Balagoon and also Nana Kwaku Angryman. That's what his name is nowadays. It's actually the same person. Balagoon is how he was known in the 1980s, and Nana is how he's known now. He's been living over in Ghana, and he was actually driven out of St Paul's at the time after an attempt to kill him. Also, we hear from Councillor Cleo Lake, former St Paul's Carnival Chair and now Green Councillor for Cotton. And this all took place at the Malcolm X Centre on Wednesday the 28th of March 2018. Dialect's produced by volunteers. We're online at dialectradio.co.uk and we're based at PRSC on Jamaica Street. I'll give you our contact details at the end of the show. So we go now to a recording made at the Malcolm X Centre on Wednesday the 28th. Of March, all about the St Paul's uprisings and lessons today.
My name is Kingsley Abrams and I am General Secretary of Momentum Black Caucus. I live in London and I've been asked to chair this meeting. And the meeting is like two sessions really. We will hear from one of our councillors about the Justice for Jeddah campaign. And then, like, the second half of the meeting will be about commemorating 38 years. Those of you who weren't born in the 80s. 38 years since the uprisings in Bristol, St Paul's. And Nana will be our keynote speaker on that. And we also have Leanne from the Labour Party, the BAME officer, that will be talking about Black Party members and issues related to Black people and what they're doing about it. And the struggles for the future. I like coming to Bristol. I have family in Bristol. Two Abrahams, one my father and one my uncle, came to England in the 60s. And my uncle came to Bristol, Hugh Lawrence, who died a few years ago. So there are Abrahams in Bristol. And my father lived in London, where I was born in London, Joe Abrahams. He's late as well. And, of course, I used to come up on a regular basis. But I used to come up when I was General Secretary of Black Sections in the Labour Party. Those of you who are a bit older will probably remember it. It was a 1980s thing as well, which is about getting more black people to join the Labour Party, becoming councillors, becoming MPs, and so on and so forth, and then getting changes in Labour's constitution. So there was recognition for self-organisation within the Labour Party. It then became the Black Socialist Society, and then it became BAME Labour, which some of you might recognise, those of you in the Labour Party, became BAME Labour, and there's now a Democracy Review. But Bristol, the slave trade in the 18th century, the way that people got rich in this city, the way that the slave owners, like Thomas Daniel, who was known as the King of Bristol, all of massive houses and massive institutions and libraries and so on, that was built on the backs of slaves. So you have the history of that and the racism that flowed from that. And then, of course, in the 60s, we had the bus boycott, when they were refusing to allow black people to work on the bus, even to be conductors. And when you went to get a job on the buses, they will say the place is full. So there was a bus boycott, and it was a very successful one in 1963. And then, of course, in the 80s, we've had the uprisings. And people, you know, felt that they had enough of what was going on, the way they were treated, the lack of education, the lack of employment, not having anything to do, no youth clubs and so on and so forth. And out of that struggle came things like the black sections in the Labour Party. We began to bring people, we began to say, well, look, one way of dealing with this thing is to get political power. Join whichever party you want to join. And that would be one way of ensuring that black people have a voice in whichever party they join. So people like Nana became chair of Bristol Black Sections and chair of Bristol West Labour Party and so on and so forth, and begin to organise and recruit and have a say within their political structures. And of course you now have a black mayor. Of course there's a lot more to be done, but we do have a black mayor, and that was only 2 years ago. And we have some black councillors, one in the Greens, there's about five in the Labour Party, not yet in the Conservatives or the Lib Dems. And we haven't got any black MPs yet in Bristol for whichever party. So there's a lot to do. And if you go to some of the meetings too often, one black person here, one black person there, and so on and so forth. So we want to change all of that. So the speakers on the platform on my right, not necessarily politically, is Leanne from Bain Labour and Momentum, so she's definitely not on the right. Nana, of course, you know, and the councillor Cleo. So our first speaker will be Cleo, who will talk about the campaign, Justice for Judah, and tell you a bit more about it. Councillor.
Okay, good evening, everyone, and thanks for attending the meeting. I'm going to start with just a quick update on the Justice for Judah campaign, because not everybody's on Facebook or has checked our website. So initially, as you will know, the officer who tasered Judah was being charged by the CPS for assault, and that case was due to be heard in January. That got cancelled because, as we're experiencing, which you know I'm told and I know is often the case, there's delay tactics. There are different things that come into the mix, and it's a long road with a lot of obstacles to justice. So that case didn't go ahead. What also came to light was the defence trying to get evidence withheld from the trial, i.e. not allowing the camera footage that most of us would have seen, trying to not have the camera footage in the trial itself, even to the extent of perhaps not even having Judah there as a witness. So those are the kind of things we've been up against. They are still trying to go down that route, and they will be seeking to take that further at Bristol Magistrates Court on the 23rd of April. So we will be there in the court as a campaign team to have a presence there. We hope it's not successful. We know that the body cam footage will also be used in the trial itself, but we also think it's very important to have those eyewitnesses there, if not also the footage. We think that's very important in terms of getting the justice that we know we need. We all saw what happened on that footage, and we're under no illusion that even the procedure of using the taser was not administered properly. So we know, we're confident that we have a strong case, but yet we also know how sometimes how these things go. But we remain optimistic and we remain with the campaign. It is looking as though the trial itself, the main trial, will take place on the 17th of May. However, it's not going to take place in Bristol. It's not going to take place in London. It's been moved around, and now, really unfortunately, the location is likely to be Salisbury, which should ring a lot of alarm bells for various reasons. I'm not chuckling because it's funny. It's because we're uncomfortable. So we are exploring whether we can make any lobby to say that we demand that the trial be heard in Bristol. There is a precedent for that, so it is possible. But again, it takes more of our voices in making that demand. So, but again, a date for your diary, 17th of May, and possibly running on to the 18th. We hope that trial date stays fixed. We hope it doesn't move any longer. We hope the road to justice is no longer delayed, because it already has been delayed. So that's where we are with the campaign. Most of you will be following this on Facebook. We also do have the website. At the back, as well as signing in, we have business cards now with details of how to get in touch and how to stay updated with the campaign. So moving on now to the main element of tonight, which you may have been led to believe by the beginning of this, that this is a kind of political platform, which to my mind it's not. Of course, I am a Green councillor. I'm not a Labour councillor. We are quite Labour heavy here tonight, I feel, particularly on the panel. Not a bad thing, but I'm here also to say that I'm a Green councillor, but I absolutely believe that political engagement is key, and which is why I stood to become a councillor and got elected. I feel that representation is very important and engagement is key. I understand some of the barriers, and perhaps we'll hear tonight some of the reasons why sections of our community do not get engaged in politics, and that can range from not voting to not considering standing for election. So I hope tonight some of us can also take away a message of, no matter which political colour you are, it is important to get engaged. It is important to be there to have a voice. And I've seen that becoming a councillor, that various meetings you attend were simply not represented around the table. But I'm sure we'll have other testimonies here tonight. We're in a challenging position, as we all know, particularly across the board, but particularly our African Caribbean community. We know people are facing deportation, you know, this hostile environment where some of our elders who have paid their taxes, who have contributed, are now facing deportation. This is simply not acceptable. This is not the Britain that we signed up for. This is not the vision of the future. And we must simply engage with this and do what we can to say that this is not acceptable. So we need to have that voice. I'm very happy tonight to hear the testimony that's going to come from Nana Kwaku Ajiman, who never used to go by that name, but he's going to take us on that journey later. I'm very interested to hear the testimony because as an activist, I sometimes don't know the in-betweens of what happened then, and I was only one when the riots took place, and now. There seems to be a bit of a gap in terms of what happened. And I think it's important to know where we've been and to map out our future. And that has to be, as far as I'm concerned, through engagement, but also through action. We need much more action. We, in some respects, it feels as though in many respects we've been sleeping since the 1980s. And I'm hoping tonight will be the start of us waking up a little bit collectively. So that's enough from me. I think we're allowing 1 or 2 minutes to hear about becoming a councillor and again about political engagement. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you
very much, Councillor, from the Green Party. And we've asked her to sit down and stay on the table because we want her to be part of the Q&A, which we'll have at the end of this speeches. So she's not running away.
We're
pinning her down.
We also do have Greens of Colour.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's our kind of caucus, okay, if you like.
The our next and keynote speaker is a very, very good friend of mine. And we go back quite a long time. I was then, as I said earlier, General Secretary of Black Sections in Labour, and I was going around the country setting up groups of black people to get themselves organised. And Nana, obviously, was the Bristol contact and he assisted me in getting a group set up in Bristol, a very strong group, very active group. He himself became chair of the Bristol West Labour Party. And of course, in the 80s, in the uprisings, the fight back and the resistance to that, what was happening, the racism, he was a very key player in that fight back and that resistance. And it's important because someone mentioned a point today, just now, that we should know our history, we should know where we're from, we should know the struggles that have gone before us, the people who did the hard work before us, people whose shoulders that we are standing on at the moment. And Nana is one of those people who was on the front line taking on the struggle and taking on the resistance. So he will talk to us now and take us through what went through. I know it's 38 years, but I've told him he only has 5 minutes now to take us through these first 38 years. And then we'll have a wonderful question and answer session. Nana.
Thank you very much, Chairman. Thank you very much, Cleo. Madame Bain, officer, I've forgotten your name already.
Leanne,
thank you very much. First of all, I'd like to thank you all for attending. I'm the type of eccentric person who expected the hall to be filled to the rafters, but reality tells a different story, and that's why I'm probably here, because I'm going to talk about reality. It's all about reality. In 7 days' time, it will be 38 years since I and other people ran up and down City Road, Grosvenor Road, Newfoundland Road, Ashley Road, and engaged the police. And we engaged the police because the level of police victimization, the level of criminalization, the poor housing that we were faced in, the fact that we couldn't get any jobs, the fact that there were no communal facilities for us, and the general stigma that was attached to this area meant that because of the colour of my skin, that I was being denied everything. There was no hope, there was no future, there was nothing. And there came a point when we had to resist all of that, where we had to stand up. Now, earlier on, the chairman talked about the bus boycott. That was led by one of my very good friends, Paul Stevenson, who I went to visit. He's not very well at the moment, but he led a brilliant campaign, and it changed a lot of things for us. Now, as I was participating, some would say in riotous assembly, unlawful assembly, but I would tell you it was an uprising, I didn't firmly grasp what it was I was fighting against. I just knew that the system was against me. And because the system was against me and everybody else who bore the colour of my skin, I knew that it was time to get up and resist and fight back. And we did. And I believe we were successful to a point, because there was a phase two of that fight which I wasn't going to take on at that point. And after that disturbance, they arrested a number of us. We were charged with so many different counts of this and that, which the police couldn't substantiate. The case fell through. In between that, I went to Nottingham, where my mother lived, and I went to visit my mother. I think it was in August of 1980, and I had a good friend who still lives in Bristol now, who went there with me. And it was a Friday night. We went out clubbing. While we was out clubbing, we met up on some white boys who were just indiscriminately beating up black people. We had a clash with them, and we saw that there were some injured people from an earlier attack. And we brought this old man and some other people to the police station, and we told them that, look, this is what is happening out there. They had some strong words for us, you know, the F off, nigger, this, that, whatever. And because I was fresh from the disturbances here, and so was the other brother, we organised people in Nottingham in Ice and Green. We bought petrol, and those days, you know, we had the milkman. For those of you who were, you know, I don't know, many of you weren't around, but we used to have the milkman. And the milkman, with the milkman system, you left your bottles out on the step, and then the milkman came in the morning, and he exchanged your empty bottle for a full bottle. And so we took those bottles, and we were fortunate to get a couple of crates. We put some money together, bought some petrol, and went up into a flat on the estate and made what I now know to be Molotov cocktails. I didn't know it was called that at the time. I was just making what to me was just a petrol bomb. And we went to the police station. Cleo's running away now. It won't, it won't affect you, Cleo. It won't affect you, Cleo. It's in the past. Don't worry. And so there was about 30 of us, I can remember. And we walked down with these crates. I don't know, it may have been midnight or a bit past midnight. And the police station was to my left, and there was 30 of us there with the two crates. And me and my friend, who were fresh from the Bristol Uprising, said, anyone who doesn't want to participate, go and stand on the other side of the road. Now, I wish he hadn't said that, because it just left the two of us.
Just like
you. Nevertheless, a few more people came back over, and we probably had about seven. And then we walked to the police station. I gave a couple of boys some bricks, and I told them, you hit that window, and that window, and we'll follow suit. And so we petrol bombed the police station, went round the back, petrol bombed the back, went up the top of the flats, and when the police eventually did come out, then we threw petrol bombs down on them there as well. After that, we made our escape, and I went and caught a train back to Bristol with my friend and left them to deal with it. Of course, you know, being young men, because I was just about 18, I'd only left home at 17, you know. Some people spilled the beans, and so they came to Bristol looking for me, eventually picked me and him up, and I went to Nottingham Crown Court, and I was given a 5-year sentence. I told the judge in no uncertain terms that I would do it again. And as I stand here today, I will do it again. I don't have any compulsion about that. I did the right thing. I was in the right place at the right time, and I did the right thing. And if I had to today, I would do it all again, because it was so necessary. So I had a 5-year custodial sentence. I was brought back to Bristol. I'd been a bit of a naughty boy whilst I was on the run. Did a few things which I wouldn't do again, and I also got 2 years concurrent, and I was sent off to Exeter. Now, while I was in Exeter, I thought about what I'd done, I realised what I'd done, and I believed that there was a way in which I could express myself in a much more positive way, where I would get the audience, where I would get people's attention, where they would listen. And we could go beyond throwing stones, beyond throwing petrol bombs, into participating in the system where my views would be heard. So I did O-level sociology in there. I got a good grade. And then I came out. When I came out, I came and saw this monstrosity. And it was just standing there. I was told, after the disturbances, the Avon County councillors, they identified that we didn't have any communal facilities, so they just built this. It used to be a big church, a great big church, a massive church. They knocked it down, they had permission from the diocese leased them the land, and they built this structure without consulting with anyone, without considering what our needs were, and they just spent £500,000 just like that and put it up. Now, I went to a meeting, and if I'm not mistaken, the gentleman in the front row, Jagun of Ginchingham, I believe that I went to that meeting with you, and there's another gentleman here, Simba, who's got his hand up there. I went to that meeting 3 days after I'd been released from serving probably 2.5 years. I went to that meeting on Brook Road, and I met about 7 people there. Owen Henry of blessed memory, who's passed away, may his soul rest in peace, he was there. Nina Westlake was there. Barbara Cole was there. Derek Johnson was there. I can't remember the rest, but they needed a chairman. And I was just fresh from prison. And I said, I'll be the chairman. And they looked at me, like seriously? I said, yeah, I'll be the chairman. And I walked out of that meeting, the chairman, and so many things is history. So many things is history. Now, we came here and we led a very vibrant St. Paul's Community Association, where black people were involved. And we were joining hands with our comrades, the white folk, who wanted to help us to overcome racial discrimination, to overcome the institutionalized racism that we face in this community. Because by and large, this community used to be densely populated with African Caribbean people. We started in the old school building. And when we started in the old school building, it was totally derelict. And we were working with a man called David Sutton, who was an architect. Many of you won't remember him at all, but he was a great guy. He was from Ireland. And he taught me so many things. I've got so many great memories about this man. He was very, very difficult. He was finicky, but he taught us a lot of things. And he brought surveyors into this building. He brought surveyors into the old school building, and we started to put the pieces together. What we did was, when Andy Pott, who was the leader of Avon County Council at the time, came and gave me the keys for the building, we were all smiles for the camera, but he didn't know we weren't going to use the building. And as soon as he'd gone, the next day, we had a press conference, and we told the world, we're not going to use this building because it's not up to scratch, there's been no consultation, there's been nothing. They've just put up what they think we need without consulting us. And furthermore, the crypt downstairs, which we can't use, when you go down there, if you lean against the wall, even today, 38 years later, the lime scale will come off on your clothes. That crypt hasn't been able to use. And I understand that when they were refurbishing it, they took out so many dead bodies anyway. So why should we use it? So we led a joint campaign whereby we didn't use this centre for about 2 years. It remained locked up. And we had a good surveyor's report, quantity surveyor's report, etc. We told the government, the Department of Environment, and the MP was William Waldegrave, who was the minister of the DOE at the time, that we needed a further £550,000 to bring this centre into use. We needed £45,000 to bring the old school building into use. And we needed a further £37,100 over a 5-year period to employ staff to run the place. We went back and forth with both councils, and they thought they could take us for a ride, but we had the community. There was unity in our community at that time. We all came together. It was hard because the guys out on the line just wanted to come in and have dances and stuff like that. And we said, no, we can't have any dances. If we compromise ourselves now, that will be it. It will be the end. We fought with our community. Me and this man here and other people, we went out onto the front line and we fought with those people, and we had to talk to those people because we were accountable to those people. Those were the people who we jointly rolled up and down this street with. So we were accountable to them. And even though they didn't want to participate politically or what have you, we knew that we were accountable to them, and we always went down there to consult them. And when we didn't go down there, we organised meetings up here where they came, and we talked to them about the reasons why we couldn't use this centre. And they agreed with us. We had the white community in Hartcliffe, in Bedminster, and the like, saying that we are ungrateful. Barton Hill, we're ungrateful. The council has spent over £500,000, and these black people are so ungrateful. We invited them to the centre. They came and saw, because we had open days so that people could just come and see for themselves what had been put up. And God being so good, they understood. And instead of saying we were grateful, they started to say that the council had wasted so much money. To cut a long story short, I can't remember his name, but he was like an agent for William Waldegrave. And one day I got a phone call and they said they were going to take us to London. If I'm not mistaken again, myself and Jagoon went to London. We drove down, they came and picked us up in some big posh Jaguar, brought us to Harrods, had a slap-up meal in Harrods on the fifth floor, and then they brought us to Westminster. We went to Westminster, we met many of the MPs, John Patton, this and that, what have you. Everybody was there apart from Thatcher. And then William Waldegrave took us over to the DOV. He gave me a cheque for £550,000 to redo this centre, and he gave me another cheque for £45,000 to bring the old school building into use, and then he gave me another cheque for £37,100 for staff for the next 5 years. And that's just an indication. That is just an indication of what we can do when we are together. And that's why 38 years later, I can still stand in this building and tell you that story. That is why. But 38 years later, I've come back from Ghana, West Africa, and I can see the gentrification. I can see the fragmentation. I can see that there's no change in the educational system. They are still failing our black children. And now they've set up concentration camp style St. Matthias referral centres that prepare you for nothing more than Borstal. It prepares you for Young Prisoners Centre. It prepares you for the mental institution. It prepares you for Horfield. It prepares you to take out a knife and stab another young youth. That's what this Concentration St. Matthias Referral Centre does. That's what it's there for. And the police rejoice when it happens. The system rejoices when it happens, when we internalise the struggle and turn in on ourselves and fight one another. And we sit by idly doing nothing. Not exactly doing nothing. We've got these 100-inch screen smart TVs that can do everything apart from cook your dinner, and we sit there watching Emmerdale and Coronation Street and EastEnders and all these useless gossipy programs that can bring no development to us, can't do anything for us, nothing at all. We sit there watching these things instead of policing our community ourselves, because my son is going after your son. Your son is going after his son, and his son is going after your son. And we all know everyone. Despite the gentrification, everybody knows everybody in Bristol. It's such a small place. And we sit on our hands, and eventually we have to go and bury our young ones. We're not willing to even police our own community to stop the black-on-black violence in our community. I come here after 38 years, the criminalization is still going on. Go to Horfield Prison and just see how many black youths are up in Horfield Prison. It's worse than it was in 1980, and we're sitting here doing nothing. I look at what's happened in Bath just the other day, the Beech and Cliff School. If I was around, I tell you, if I was around today, when that happened, the family of that boy who was whipped by seven white boys in a mock style auction situation, they'd be sitting here with me today, because I would provide the support along with other people for that family, because I can tell you they're petrified, they're worried sick, they can't do anything, they don't want their son to come out and testify against those boys that tied him up against the lamppost and whipped him. They are frightened, and there is no support. There is no black support at all. They're just 15 miles down the road. What are we doing about them? Absolutely nothing. A lot of the people that I want to be addressing, they're not here. Where are they? They're at home. Doing what? Nothing. Doing rubbish. Doing nonsense. They are not here. We need to provide support for that family. We need to identify that family, and we need to give them the support they need. And those seven white boys that carried out that mock style auction and the whipping, they must be expelled, or that school must be closed down. Must be closed down. Let me tell you, back in the day, we St. Paul's Apartheid Free Zone. And there were 21 shops in our community. I don't know how many shops there are now. But we had a declaration which said that these shops would not sell, they would not stock any South African goods until Nelson Mandela is free and the apartheid regime has crumbled. Now, we used to go to these shops and we used to picket these shops. Like every Wednesday, every Friday, we have our placards. We go in there, we check
what food stuff they have. We scrape it off the shelves. We throw it on the floor. All different kinds of things. I call it civil disobedience. That's what it was, civil disobedience. And on a Wednesday in particular, we used to go down to Newfoundland Road. There used to be a Barclays Bank in this community. The Barclays Bank is no more in this community. We used to go in a line in the Barclays Bank. I didn't have any money in the bank. Didn't even know what money looked like at that time. Couldn't get a job, could I? Because I was black. So we were there in the line. And when we got to the counter, we would say, no more blood money in South Africa. And we would take up all the queues. 10 people behind me, 10 people in that line, 10 people in the other line. And we kept going every single Wednesday. Then the civil disobedience stepped up. We used to sit in the bank. We used to sit down. They used to call the police. The police used to come and lift us up and bring us and put us out on the pavement. And then we used to walk back into the bank and sit back down. Some would join the queue. The police would come in and pick us up and put us back down on the pavement. And we continued with that until Barclays Bank shut their doors to the community of St. Paul's. They packed up lock, stock and barrel and they left our community. And that was the end of Barclays Bank. Another indication of what we can do when we're together. I sat on the police liaison committee, the same committee that Brother Judah sits on. I used to sit on that community, that committee, and used to raise issues, black issues, about the way that they used to police us in this area. And furthermore, at around times like this, I'd be out on the front line, and when the police come, I used to start my car and drive behind them to everywhere they went in our community until they got so choked off they drove away. I used to do it every night. It wasn't a big deal for me because at the end of the day I was committed to the development of my community. And that's what we need. We need people who are prepared to be committed to the development of this community despite how fragmented it is. It's not about black people just living in St. Paul's, because they live all over now, St. George's, Hendon, wherever. But this building should be the focal point for all activities. We have the silent deportation that's taking place of, it's an attack really, it's an attack on the African Caribbean elderly community. They're being attacked. They've been here 50, 60 years and now we're asking for their passport. They've been working here, paying their taxes, doing their 9 to 5, and even longer. And now we're saying, if you don't have a passport, then you've got to go. There should be a 24-hour hotline in this building where they can call in when they've been taken into police custody. We should have direct links with sympathetic lawyers who are prepared to give these people support. But there's nothing. There's nothing. There's nothing going on when there should be so much going on from this place. This is what this was set up for. This is why it was set up. This is why it's been established. But nothing is happening. And we need to wake up because there are so many issues. We should be picketing outside the St. Matthias Referral Centre. We should be picketing that place. We don't want our kids going there. Because when they send your children there, they've condemned your child. They've condemned them. They've all but criminalized them. They're on the radar. The police are parked outside there, watching who and who is coming outside there. They're targeting kids. Because these are the children that they say are the ones that are going to end up in the Borstal or the Young P offenders or in Hawfield or the mental institution, or unfortunately they're going to fight against themselves and someone's going to be killed. It's terrible. It needs to really stop. And we need to be active. I'd like to be here every month speaking because I know the crowds will be bigger and bigger and bigger and we'd become active. We'd start to help ourselves. Instead of thinking that it's good enough to point our fingers at institutions and say, oh, they're racist, they're racist, they're racist. My brothers and sisters, that's insufficient. It's insufficient. You must get up
and start to help yourself. You must set the examples. I was on a radio show the other day and we were talking about the fact that the youth don't respect the elder black folk. And I can tell you the reason why. Because you've not set any examples. You've not set anything. You've not done nothing. You've done absolutely nothing and you want respect. Respect is something that is earned. It's not just given to you because you're older. I will never ever support that. That's why you don't have their respect, because you're doing nothing. You're just talking, but you're not walking your talk. You've got done nothing to show as an example for the young kids to follow. And even when you hear your child is in a little brouhaha with someone who you've gone to school with, you won't even call that person and say, why mir se my youth a fight against your youth, you know. But we sit on and talk about it because I can't go on. Let me just translate that. I've heard that my child is having a problem with your child. And we should really sit down and talk about it and resolve the matter. Because that's all it takes. That's all it takes. That's all it takes. I came in here and I saw an Afro-Caribbean self-help group for men. And they were playing dominoes and playing table tennis and playing chess. And that's not self-help. That's not self-help. It's not self-help. I want a self-help organisation for men that sits down and says, right, let's get our kids inside this hall and knock sense into them. Knock sense into them. If they've got any problem with someone over there or someone, it must stop. It must all stop. It must all stop. We don't want to hear it. And anybody who steps out of line will be dealt with. These are the things we've got to be doing. These are the things we've got to be doing. With no apology. No apology. And we all know what needs to be done. You don't actually need to hear from me. You just need to get up and do it. It's your kids. I've got children here. I've got grandchildren here that live in Bristol. We know everybody. Everybody knows everybody. Get up and be counted and do something. I guess you realise that I've thrown away my speech. But I want to say something.
You have 2 minutes left.
I've got 2 minutes. I'm not going to finish in 2 minutes. But I just... Let me just say this, because I'm saddened that one of my elders lost his son in a stabbing incident in a club in St. Paul's. I can't remember the chap's name, but it was all over Facebook. And a lot of people said it was the biggest funeral that has ever happened in St. Paul's. Now, I want to say that if it was my son, I wouldn't want anybody saying that. Because I can't find any comfort. I can't find any meaning in sitting down and acknowledging that that was the biggest funeral that's ever taken place in Bristol. Because I've lost my son. My flesh and blood. So I can't be happy about that. I can never be happy about it. And it's something that could have been prevented. Could have been prevented. And so this is why we've got to get up and do stuff. We must get up and do stuff. There's an increase in black councillors, but there's no mechanism in ensuring that those councillors are accountable. There's nothing there. The lady is just talking about us becoming councillors. You become a counsellor in isolation. You don't come back to the black community that you represent and talk to them about the policies or whatever is happening in the council. There must be a forum for that discussion to take place. There must be a forum for that level of accountability. If you are there in that position and there's no accountability, it's as if you're not there. You're in a vacuum somewhere. But we can't blame those people who are there if the communities still lie dormant. You can't blame them because those people have put themselves forward as leaders. They're walking the talk. Now what they need is the support from black people in the community and white people in the community too. They need that support because where they find themselves, they're outnumbered. And when they raise issues about black this and black that and black this, they're outnumbered. But if the other councillors in there know that they have the support of communities, the black communities in St. Paul's, they will listen a bit harder. They will take keen interest. We must support them. We're not even supporting them. We're not supporting them. We're not demanding accountability. We're still not doing anything. 7 days to go. It's 38 years. Where have we got to in 38 years? What has changed in 38 years? We have a community association here. It's the Malcolm X Centre. They have no comment on the Beech and Cliff issue. They have no comment on the silent deportations that is going on. They have no comment on black-on-black violence. They have no comment on the St. Matthias concentration camp school referral. They have no comment on criminalisation. They have no comment on the fact that we pack out Horfield Prison. They have no comment that we fill out the mental institution. They have no comment on anything. Nothing whatsoever. I don't know if there is a value in this St. Paul's Community Association in the fight against racial injustice, in the fight against institutionalized racism. And from where I stand, I think they've got to be changed. Because this used to be a very vibrant place where all the issues came here. And we dealt with all the issues with our meager resources. We organized people. We got out on the streets. We made ourselves heard. But today we're quiet. 38 years after the uprising. Where are we? I read in The Guardian the other day that Bristol is the most divided place in England and Wales when it comes to race. No joke. That was just, I think it's 10 days ago in The Guardian. 10 days ago. It's the most divided place in the entire England and Wales when it comes to race. Where are we gone? Where are we? What progress has been made? It's insufficient to say there's been an increase in representation because it's representation in a vacuum. So today, for me, 38 years later, there's been no change. It's even worse. But you can make that change. You can make things different. And you know without me telling you what you can do. And I'm asking you, make that change. Make the difference. Get up, stand up, and fight for your rights.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
That's all for this week. Dialects Bristol's first weekly MP3 podcast. You can download it to listen on your phone or in the car. You can subscribe and listen the week before broadcast at dialectradio.co.uk. Thanks to our guests, that is Nana Kweku Angriman, that is used to be known as Russ Kuumba Jahili Balagoon. He was talking about St. Paul's uprisings in 1980. As was Councillor Cleo Lake, former St. Paul's Carnival Chair, now Green Councillor for Cotton. And that talk was recorded at Malcolm X Centre on Wednesday the 28th of March here in Bristol's very own St. Paul's. Thanks also to studio engineer Dave Bazanko. Dialects of Bristol Broadband Co-op production catches on Bristol Community FM 93.2 every Tuesday at noon. Although at the moment, I'm afraid it's very unreliable. We can't get guarantees from the manager that the programme will be broadcast. Anyone can contribute though, and of course we're still there as a podcast. You can contact us through the People's Republic of Stokes Croft, just off Jamaica Street. They're online at prsc.org.uk. You can volunteer with us or for hundreds of opportunities elsewhere in Britain via the national volunteering website, do-it.org. That was Dialect, and I'm Tony Gosling, wishing you a very good week. Thanks for listening. Till the same time next week. Goodbye for now.
sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Stand clear. Done, man, attack. You can't stand where I stand. You can't walk where I walk. Wicked overseer, your hot shot, you wanna get pops and be a savior. First show a little respect, change your behavior, change your attitude, change your plan. There could never really be justice or stolen land. Are you really for peace and equality? Or when my car's hooked up, you know you wanna follow me. Your laws are minimal, cause you won't even think about looking at the real criminal. This has got to cease, cause we be getting hyped to the sound of the police. That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. There's a little truth. Open up your eye while you're checking out the boombox. Check the exercise. Take the word overseer like a sample. Repeat it very quickly and approve for example. Overseer, 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 officer. Yeah, officer from overseer. You need a little clarity? Check the similarity. The overseer rode around the plantation. It's a patrolling out of nation. The overseer could stop you what you're doing. The officer will pull you over just when he's pursuing. The overseer had the right to get ill. And if you fought back, the overseer had the right to kill. The officer has the right to arrest. And if you fight back, they put a hole in your chest. They both ride horses. After 400 years, I've got no choices. The police, they have a little gun. So when I'm on the streets, I walk around with a bigger one. I hear it all day. So they could run the light and be upon their way.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police.
Whoop, whoop.
That's the sound of the beast.
Whoop, whoop.
That's the sound of the police.
Whoop, whoop.
That's the sound of the beast. Check out the message in a rough style. The real criminal on the COP. You check for undercover anyone.
Come on, baby, when the music's playing, I wanna see you dance. What are we gonna do? Tell me. basement to play. Feel the whole damn world move to the groove. I said it's love.